Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
All right, Darren. The world, the foundation of the world has been shaken. Seth Rollins headed to the world title final in the Night of Champions tournament. Obviously, no shock at all. You know, Cody and Seth, they probably weren't going to rematch on Raw and in any kind of a one-on-one match. And Seth, the favorite to win the tournament. Doesn't mean he will, but he's regarded as a favorite. And, yeah, Finn Balor didn't exactly seem positioned, even though he was in the semifinal against Seth, to move on to be the, you know, a headline match for a world title, given how he's been pushed lately. So no shock, but we got a good match out of it. And sometimes the predictable thing is the right thing to do. And man, you know, I know there's mixed feelings on Seth as a top guy. 5 years ago, the recent post-show flashback we just put up of our 5 years ago show, we were talking about whether Seth was showing signs of being somebody who could be the answer to, if not Roman Reigns as the lead babyface, whom. And here he is, 5 years later, still in the conversation. What do you think, Darren, about Seth's journey tonight?
Yeah, absolutely predictable. And as you pointed out, not that that's the worst thing. We got to actually see it play out, and it was an entertaining ride along the way. Absolutely predictable. Yeah, and he's got, I mean, it's not entrenched in any kind of feud or anything, so it's the perfect time to do it. He'll be in a big featured match at their Saudi Arabia event. So it's a good move. And, I mean, there's no sense just going, picking somebody out of left field just because people aren't expecting it. So it was a fine move.
Where are you as far as Seth being the person to win the tournament? Should it be him? Otherwise, it's going to be AJ Styles, Edge, Rey Mysterio, Bobby Lashley, Austin Theory, or Sheamus. Considering that this is a Raw-based championship, and considering that list doesn't feature anyone that I think is a high candidate to be the first World Heavyweight Championship, it's almost like Seth just won the tournament, but maybe they have a curveball going our way. So if it does turn out to be Seth, is he a good person? Is he the best choice of those available, and are you enthusiastic about him being the lead babyface, the workhorse champion, to kind of counter the reign of Roman, which, you know, in some form or fashion, at some point down the line, will lead to a Seth Roman match under some circumstances.
Yeah, I'm fine with it. Seth has the momentum right now. People love chanting the song, and they're into him as a character and as a wrestler as well. So it fits. The belt to me, though, just comes off as so secondary. I don't think it's going to be seen as an equal belt because of the history, and it's just coming out of nowhere with people, just being thrown into a tournament. Miz was in it, who has, like, you know, was just getting beaten up by Snoop Dogg. I mean, so it doesn't have that kind of credibility, but for what they're trying to accomplish, Seth is the perfect person to establish it. You know, it's already going to be seen as something. They're going to at least try to attempt to see it as something that's top tier. I don't know if that's going to be successful or not. We will see.
The other big happening in the tournament was Cody being pulled by Brock Lesnar, which opened up the door for Balor to advance. Cody was willing to win the title. It was awkward watching him address winning the title when it's clearly not the title that's part of his journey. It's been a topic of conversation since Triple H established this new championship for Raw that is going to be difficult for Cody to not fight for it, but also and not win, how they would go about that. It seemed Brock Lesnar was the answer to that question. Did you like what they did here, angle-wise, and really just the way Cody addressed the possibility of becoming world champion?
Yeah, that was kind of predictable as well, because you knew that he couldn't take the loss, and it was a good way of, you know, bringing Lesnar in and getting them another big marquee match at their upcoming event as well. Yeah, Cody kind of talked around it. At least he didn't try to say, this is the title that, you know, that I've always wanted or whatever. Yeah. At least they didn't go that route. So they just kind of skipped over it a little bit and got out of it without him acknowledging this is the final chase for him or how to end the story as he's referencing. So, yeah, they just danced around it a bit and just referenced it just enough that, you know, it meant something to him, but it wasn't like his big final goal.
Yeah, yeah, yep. And I think they handled an awkward situation well enough. You know, he said that, you know, he looked at the belt and said he will fight tooth and nail until he is announced as a new champion. I mean, what a way to sidestep whether that's the goal you want. He didn't bury it. He didn't endorse it. He just said, I'm in the tournament, so I'll fight hard to win it. He didn't get himself into a position to explain if whether that would be a substitute for his other goal. So, and now they've moved on. You know, they're past that now. You know, if Seth's the babyface champion and Cody's a co-babyface on Raw, Cody can do his thing. Seth can do his as champion. We'll see where they go. By the way, do you think there is a chance? And if so, who is the top candidate among Rey Mysterio, Edge, AJ Styles, Bobby Lashley, Sheamus, and Austin Theory to beat Seth? And I assume, and this is kind of weird because they might not have thought about it if they're just going to have Seth win. They just, you know, I could imagine Vince McMahon just going, who cares? We're just going to do what we have to do to draw ratings. We're going to have a match. Seth's going to win. Who cares if it makes no sense that a SmackDown wrestler, in theory, could have won it. But is there a chance a SmackDown wrestler wins it and then presumably just kind of shifts to Raw or maybe gets traded to Raw or something that they have yet to address, which is also awkward?
If they did it, it would just be just to throw the fans off. I don't think that would make any sense. The storyline seems to be that Seth should win it, and that's how it should go. But if they were to venture off course and have somebody do it, I think giving it to Edge would cause the least disruption because he's kind of in and out, although kind of defeats the purpose of him being the champion. I mean, he could lose it quickly, of course. But if he were to switch sides, it wouldn't make any difference, really, because he's not an established Raw or SmackDown guy. So I could see it going to him. And plus, that's a big enough marquee match. They want to have some big matches for the Saudi Arabia show. And that would certainly be Edge against Seth would be something big enough. So
yeah.
I would think they would head in that direction. And if Edge loses, take anything away from him.
Yeah, yeah. If it's going to be a heel in that position, I mean, not a lot of choices in that lineup. I mean, there's some ambiguous characters who might shift a little bit. Sheamus and Lashley could be portrayed in tweener ways or other ways going into that match. They could do a straight-up face-to-face matchup. Austin Theory as the fresh U.S. champ going in and losing to Seth at Night of Champions doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. So I'm curious what they do, but we'll largely focus on Raw here. Speaking of which, let's pause, introduce ourselves, and then invite everybody who's listening to participate. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, May 8th, 2023. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter and the website pwtorch.com, where you can find my live TV coverage every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday night covering Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. We also have breaking news, editorials, and other special features throughout the week. And we also have alternative perspective reports on those TV shows that I just mentioned every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. We've got live NXT coverage. And we even have coverage of Impact Wrestling every Thursday. Imagine that. And the other voice you hear on the show is the author of our Impact TV reports every Thursday, Darren Lilly. Darren, welcome back to the co-host chair.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Good to have you. How's Impact been lately?
That's pretty good. It's an exciting time with Trinity signing, and they're making a very big deal about her coming into the league. So it's a good time for Impact.
Tell people about your VIP show.
Yes, me and John Laszlo, we recap Impact Wrestling and talk about all the going-ons there, recap the show, talk about whatever new signings they have, that kind of thing. So it's a fun show. Gelling together. We've been together a few weeks, and it's a good show, so check it out. If you don't get to check out Impact, we'll do a good job of recapping it for you.
All right, so go VIP to get that show, pwtorch.com/goVIP. I mentioned the possibilities of who might win the tournament. We ran a poll at pwtorch.com. We put it up last night, and listed everybody, all 12 who are candidates this week to win the tournament. We said, who do you predict will win the tournament? 62% picking Seth Rollins, 13% goes to Cody Rhodes in second place. No one else in double digits, but Finn Balor did finish in third. So, I mean, I guess with him in the final, gives maybe partial points to those who voted for him. After that, scattered votes for AJ Styles and Shinsuke Nakamura and Miz. At 2% or less, Bobby Lashley, Edge, and the rest. So, I mean, people are expecting Seth Rollins to win this one. So we'll see if WWE gets a curveball or they just kind of work their way through this. And, you know, again, predictability isn't the end of the world. And we will, we hope that WWE just does. I could imagine WWE just thinking, we don't care for predictable. We just want to get, have a credible circumstance to get Seth onto the show, or give Seth a world title where he had to fight for it. And then we'll just move on from there. Let's forget about the awkwardness of everything else. So we'll see. All right. So if you haven't called us yet, you are invited to do so. Our phone number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, please push 1 on your keypad. That flags you on our switchboard and lets us know that you want to be on the show. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That is wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. All right. So let's get rolling with calls, and we'll begin with area code 404. 404, go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, Wade, this is Rob from Atlanta.
Hey, Rob, good to hear from you. What's on your mind about Rob tonight?
Hey, man. Good, good. How are you guys doing?
Good.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, my first point was, man, this was a boring show, wasn't it? I don't know if it was the crowd, if it was the families that couldn't really make it to Puerto Rico and they just came to have a good time to see the backlash of backlash. But this show dragged, and it was really, I mean, it was high at some points, but for the most part, the crowd was a little dead. What do you think about that?
Well, yeah, I mean, one of the themes, unfortunately, post draft is it sort of becomes the first show after the draft becomes a way to introduce new wrestlers. Some of them are actually new. Some of them are just, you know, we're on Fridays and not Mondays and vice versa. But it also, this year, they had so much crossover talent, you know, just a handful of key wrestlers were on both shows, including Bloodline appearances. And when you take them away, because you now do a hard brand split for the moment, at least, and then you have like Nikki Cross and Zoe Stark being introduced, Mustafa Ali against Otis. What's another? Dana Brooke, you know, in a match against the women's champ. When those are your matches, and then, you know, a little quickie angle with Xavier Woods and Dominic, it starts feeling like a, you know, most of the show is a B show because they haven't laid the groundwork to make the wrestlers who are now filling up the show feel important. And if they had planned ahead, you know, in anticipation of where everyone was going to land, and let's say they planned 6 weeks ahead what the first post-draft Raw would look like, they could have been planting seeds about Xavier and Dominic, so it'd be more anticipation for that. They could have actually done something with Dana Brooke to make people care more about her heading into this match. I mean, it's a stretch because in some ways the lineup is just the lineup. I mean, there's only so much you can do to make, you know, several of these matches feel important, but it did feel thin at times in a way that it hasn't recently during WrestleMania season and right afterwards. And then, of course, the draft added some excitement to things, too. So, yeah, we're in that kind of awkward stage, and not everybody had shown up. You know, Gunther hadn't shown up yet, although we had Becky Lynch, you know, make her you know, surprise return with Trish, so that added some star power. I mean, I didn't think it was, like, an awful show. I don't know if I'd call it boring. I would say it didn't feel like half of it didn't feel important, and the rest of it felt somewhat predictable. And again, predictable isn't bad, but you need to have a strong show wrapped around the predictability to make that predictability not drag the show down. And unfortunately, this just didn't have it. Darren, what do you think overall of the show?
Yeah, I got to agree with Rob. Yeah, sure, there were some good points here and there, but it was overall kind of lackluster to me. I was wondering if, you know, there's some sports competition and the dog show, which they always used to get preempted, is running this week. So there's some competition, and maybe they said maybe we'll save some of the debuts and establish the new people for when there's more viewers, and we don't want to just throw it all out there tonight. So I was thinking maybe they did that and filled it up with the tournament matches, which went a little bit longer. So that could be it. They could be thinking that as well. But, yeah, I mean, I was surprised to see, like, you know, Ali, who's a good wrestler, but, you know, the way they portray him is not, you know, very, you know, one of the top guys by any means, and Dana Brooke, who I don't even know that she was listed in the draft for that matter. Yeah, it's kind of surprising to see those names when they could have spotlighted some of the NXT people, perhaps. I didn't understand that, but maybe they're just saving it for another week, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of the challenge is you've got these new NXT wrestlers coming up, and this show was, you know, had the video package introducing them. It had Jinder Mahal introducing his guys, but it does feel like for half the show, you're asking fans to suddenly care about wrestlers who would not have made the cut pre-draft, and that's going to be a problem, you know. I mean, in terms of viewership, but I mean, it had Cody, it had Seth, it had Becky, it had Trish, it had Brock. You know, it wasn't void of stars, but part of the problem is I don't know that a 3-hour format can support the first post-draft show when you don't have all hands on deck, when you don't have everybody there and advertised in significant matches. And I think it was just, you know, one or two matches too many that were just sort of out of nowhere involving wrestlers that fans weren't invested in yet. Rob, back to you for any follow-up.
Yeah, I agree. And that's to me, that's the problem, is that, it, you know, it felt like a lot of the, well, not a lot, some of the show, a majority of the show was really like mid-card, like, introducing like some new mid-card people. I loved Zoe Stark, by the way, but it just felt like, and like your, to your point, the bloodline wasn't on the show, but with all the other stars on the show, we shouldn't have to depend on the bloodline to get a little excitement in the show. Leads me to my second point. You mentioned it, Wade. Gunther was missed. In my eyes, I feel like Imperium needs him at ringside, at least, because he brings that wow, awe factor to the act. And I don't know if Imperium, because, you know, Raw is like, to me, Raw is like the entertainment show. So you need that entertainment factor. It's not really about the wrestling, and they're great mat wrestlers, but I feel like they need that star in Gunther to kind of give them that rub so that they can get kind of over on Raw. What do you guys think about that?
Darren, what do you think?
Yeah, Imperium is definitely portrayed as background characters, and they certainly came off that way tonight. I was surprised they got just beat so easily and clean. That just really threw me. I was like, wow. I mean, they don't have that many tag teams that they can just be running through people. That really surprised me because, I mean, it seems like, well, that's that one and done. So, yeah, they obviously need Gunther coming back. I think he'll be back next week. Yeah, I think they were kind of exposed there. I did not care for how they were presented.
Not that they've been protected, but if you're going to – if you're trying to make a big deal out of the acquisitions from Raw and you have two wrestlers associated with someone who's going to be a huge part of whether Raw feels like the roster has some depth, Gunther is a – major, potentially a major star for them beyond this Intercontinental title reign. And if he's hanging out with two guys who just lose their first match post-draft and do so cleanly, granted it's against, you know, a top-level team, but you're treating them as just, you know, guys to be discarded on week one, I think it weakens Gunther a little bit. I don't know where they plan to go in terms, maybe, you know, Jinder's team, maybe that's who they're going to do Sammy and KO against next, but it would, I mean, I don't see any reason. I wish that they had planned far enough ahead and protected Imperium more so that Imperium against Sammy and KO would feel like a big deal and they could have built to it on the show rather than just give it away quickly. But, you know, realistically coming into this week, that's not where Giovanni Vinci and Ludwig Kaiser were. You know, they had not been protected. So it's in given how they've been portrayed, this was the right match and the right finish. My argument is you should step back a couple months and go, hey, these guys are good. Gunther's important. Let's treat Gunther and Vinci like we do the Usos, who are with Roman, in the sense that we can't have them look weak because that'll pull Roman down. And they didn't do that, and we're kind of paying the price for it now. And they're good enough in the ring. I think they could have gotten away with featuring them in a more prominent way. So, they're going to be utility guys, and I think you're right, Rob. It hurts Gunther to have a couple utility guys who lose more than they win, as his two cohorts.
Yeah, and so that leads me to my third point, and I'm going to wrap up soon. I only got two more points. I don't want to be on your list. I heard about your list.
You're good.
My third point is to piggyback off of Imperium, and it's to talk about Sami Zayn. And to me, I just feel like he's cooling off really quickly, like quicker than I thought he would cool off. I knew he was going to have a little bit of a lull period after being on such a high from Elimination Chamber with Roman. How do you heat up Sami particularly? Not really Kevin, because he's still getting some pretty good reactions and people pop for his music. But I feel like Sami out of that group needs to be heated up. And God forbid we get another Sami KO feud breakup angle. So how would you guys go about heating Sami up? Would you have him win more matches for the team, get more pinfalls? Would you have him have a little bit more edge to him? Do you need to throw different opponents at him, like, and step away from the bloodline angle for a minute just to kind of reset? What do you guys think?
It's a great question. I feel the same way. I mean, and it's not that it was inevitable that there's going to be a drop-off after the peak of Montreal and that whole storyline, but they needed to be ready with something else. And now that they're separated from the bloodline from the draft, I mean, I just don't think there's something ready that – for him, and I don't think if you ask people what's Sammy's mission right now, to me, the endearing, somewhat conflicted underdog who just wanted to belong somewhere is gone. That's not who we're seeing on TV anymore, and I think he's trying to find himself a little bit, and I hope there's a priority put on figuring out what his next mission is and why people are expected to like him and relate to him and get behind him again, because there is no cause for him right now. He's accomplished the peak of the tag team division. He and KO have, he's separated from the bloodline. And it's like, what, I don't know. It's like, parents who raise their kids and their kids all go off to college and they don't know what to do anymore. Like, they're just like, what do we do? We were so preoccupied for two decades raising our kids. Now we don't even know what to do with ourselves. And there's a little bit of that with Sami right now. Yeah. Darren, what do you think?
I just don't necessarily think that they have big plans for him going forward as a prominent character, that it might have just run its course and they might just be fine with that. In addition, I don't think if history tells us anything, I don't think he's going to be on their next big show. So there's no sense focusing a big feud if he's not going to be on the Saudi Arabia show, him and Owens. So they just might be on the back burner, just, beating random teams here for a little bit, just chilling out. But yeah, even after that show, I just don't know if he's going to be a priority for them to build around. They had the whole bloodline thing, and I don't think they're going back to they never ended the thing with him and Jimmy, and I don't think they're going back to that. They're on different shows now, allegedly. So yeah, I'm not sure how that's going to turn out for Sami.
And Sammy's good, and he and Kale play off each other well, and I still get a huge kick out of Kevin Owens, but I think fans are going to look at Sami and go, it was so fun earlier this year and last year, and something's missing. And, it's not that Sami's doing anything wrong, but he's not doing anything super compelling, and I think people – you're not alone, Rob. People are going to look at him and go, it's not the same as it was in the lead-up to Mania and as it was in the Bloodline storyline, and that's why I think it's all the more important for him that they have really a really strong idea for him and Kevin Owens post-draft, and maybe that will start to take shape next week. I hope it does. Yeah, Rob, back to you.
Yeah, it makes me wish I had premonition, because if we knew now what if we knew then what we know now, I wish they would have just kept the belts off of Owens and Zayn and then just saved Zayn for this push for the heavyweight championship. because I feel like he could have really been in the mix on Raw with that. So I don't know. And then my last point, and then I'll let you guys go. So good to talk to you, man. I haven't talked to you in a minute.
Yeah.
Trish. Trish came out there, and she was like, I was expecting something great from her tonight because, you know, just because she was on the show on Backlash. So I was like, okay, maybe they'll save something really cool for Trish. She was at the top of the 10 o'clock hour. So I was like, damn, nobody's going to watch. Like, nobody's really watching this at 10 o'clock. The Lakers are playing now. Like, so 10 o'clock hour was, like, crucial. And to put Trish out there at the top of the 10 o'clock hour with her, how can I put it? She needs to project her voice more. It's okay to sound like that little, like, snotty, like, bratty, mean girl. But, like, she can project her voice more because she kind of shrinks. Her promo makes her shrink.
Yep.
And she's a big star, and she's a legacy star. And she's still got a great look after all these years. But it's just something about Trish that, you know, they need to – she needs to – and I hate to say this because she's been doing this for so long. She needs to still, at this point in the game, still work on her promo skills. What do you think about Trish's promo? And, of course, Becky coming back. And then I'll let you guys go. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, thanks, Rob. If this is the most vocally she can do, so be it. Then it's just baked, you know, it's sort of baked in. But I don't know that to be the case, and I agree with Rob. It's her vocal cords sound very tight and very – she talks in a way that doesn't project. Like she's talking from, you know, like a voice coach would say, you're talking from your throat instead of your diaphragm. And if like she just physically isn't able to, and then so be it. We got to work with what we are working with. But if there's a way to improve that – I mean, if I'm WWE and I'm going to give her this much mic time, you know, then, you know, figure out if there's a way for her to work around that or just coach her into talking from the diaphragm more than from this kind of what sounds like tight vocal cords coming from the throat. It's always been a thing with her. So maybe, you know, that's just her voice and they're working around it. Now, all that said, I actually think in some ways it's working for her. I think that given the way that she's talking and the way that Rob characterized it, I think there is a snideness to the way that she is talking that's actually more effective than I was anticipating. Or I don't know if effective is a word, but because that's, you know, in a way remains to be seen. But it's just coming across style-wise as a heel that you just – want to see get booed. It's like, I'm not watching her going, I can't hear her or she's not holding my attention. And she's leaning hard into being kind of that snarky, snide personality. And calling a 2-year-old stupid or dumb. At first I was like, what? But then, you know, Corey Graves out of nowhere called Dana Brooke low IQ, which I thought was kind of, you know, prickish, but I don't know where that came from. So Corey seemed to be in a bit of a mood today. He misinterpreted something Kevin Patrick said, and then he didn't apologize when Kevin Patrick explained himself. Like, Corey, when you're hard on somebody and you get caught because you misunderstood or misinterpreted something, just apologize. And he never does that. And he's, you know, often right, but sometimes wrong. And tonight, I don't know, he just seemed to be in a mood. I don't know if it was the travel from Puerto Rico or what. Anyway, that's a sidebar. Darren, your thoughts on what Rob had to say about Trish, her vocal presentation, and then my take that as much as, yes, I'd rather have her project better, I actually think this character is kind of working, and I think that she is annoying and unlikable enough that people are going to be pretty excited to see Becky beat her up.
Yeah, what she does well is does the condescending attitude and being arrogant, you know, talking about the baby. That was good stuff. So that's on the positive side. But, yeah, what Rob said certainly has some validity to it as well. The you know, Trish's promos, you kind of know what you're going to get, and the bar is kind of low, and I think she's meeting the expectations. And as in her heel personas, maybe seeing them just a little bit. But, yeah, there's certainly room for improvement. And I think it was more about Becky than her tonight. They just wanted to, you know, get her with her lines, and then Becky comes out for the surprise. So I thought it was fine. But, yeah, definitely some room for improvement. And going to the Corey Graves thing, hasn't he knocked Dana Brooke before?
Yeah.
So then maybe there's some personal issue or something, because I could have swore a while back he had said something about like her abilities or something like that, and it was like, wow, that's kind of odd.
He also said he learned a lot about Michael Cole this weekend. Now, Corey's been traveling with Cole for years and years and years and years. What happened in Puerto Rico? And it was in reference to dancing. So did Cole get, you know, like, I don't know. Like, I don't know. I don't want to speculate. But, like, it was very cryptic. And now I want to ask around and go, what exactly did Michael Cole do this weekend that Corey Graves referred to on or out? Is it quite a night for Corey Graves? Corey's like really good at what he does. I get why, you know, Vince McMahon and Paul Levesque lean on him, you know, and obviously Kevin Patrick is inexperienced in this role and Graves is experienced and he does a lot of things well. But there are times Corey just, it's like, why? And what are you doing? And be nicer. I mean, there's times he's called out Jimmy Smith and I'm like, well, you're right, but I don't, you're very unlikable in being right. And even with Booker T sometimes, you know, there was, obviously, Booker has said many, many counterproductive things that drives Corey Graves nuts, but sometimes there's better ways to handle it. Although I will say probably more than half the time I was cheering on Corey when it came to him calling out Booker for some of the nonsense he said. But I don't know. It's mixed feelings about Corey, but this was a weird night for him.
Yeah, I'm leaning – not really a Corey fan. So.
Yeah. I do not blame you for that. All right, our number, 347-215-8558. If you call and you're invited to, push 1, and that'll flag you on a switchboard so that we know you want to be on the show. Otherwise, Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. We are expecting to hear from our on-site correspondent, Brad, any minute now. But in the meantime, we're going to go to William in San Diego next, and then Chris from Oklahoma, you are next. I see you have just called. William, welcome. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
Hey, guys. Thank you for taking the call. I think I agree with the previous caller that overall to me, it felt like a very long, like longer than usual. But, you know, I think a lot of that has to do with just getting used to the new, I guess, format of the brand split. While you're on the topic of, you know, Corey Graves and Kevin Patrick, it's been a few months of Kevin Patrick being like the new voice of Raw. And, I haven't really been that impressed. And, I personally don't feel like there's been any, if at all, improvement. So I don't know. How do you guys feel about him? Do you feel like there's still, you know, a ceiling that he's kind of growing into, like he's still kind of feeling out the job and he can only get better from here? Or is this kind of where he'll just land? Like, is this the best he can do? As harsh as that sounds.
I think the accent is sort of endearing, but in part of it is he doesn't call it Monday Night Raw. He calls it Moonday Night Raw still. Moonday Night Raw. I think Kevin Patrick's fine. I don't think he's bordering on, like, good, but, you know, it's faint praise to say, you know, he's bordering on it. But I don't think he's awful. I think Jimmy Smith actually in the end was a little bit better than Patrick right now. Because I thought Jimmy Smith got better. I was hard on Jimmy at the beginning, but I think he did improve, and I think Jimmy was in enough ways better than I'd probably vote for him over Patrick. But I haven't given up on Kevin Patrick, and I think he and Corey have a pretty decent chemistry with one another. Darren, what do you think about is he improving at all, and where do you think he stands now?
If he's improved since the day he debuted, it's been very minimal at best. For the most part, I tune out the commentary as I have for the last 20 years on Raw. So I mean, they want bland and they've got it. I mean, I don't think he really adds much to the show. It's not taken away from anything, not that he's just awful, but I don't necessarily think he necessarily adds anything either. So, yeah, I don't think he's improved. And I was very surprised that during the draft, they didn't shake up the announced teams. That came as a big surprise to me. But,
you know,
I wasn't who you would have brought in.
That's the thing. I'm not surprised because I think they like Wade Barrett and Cole they want in front of the most people, and that's SmackDown. And I do think Corey and Patrick work well together. I mean, I think, you know, one of the keys is what Corey is good at, he can do with somebody like Kevin Patrick, who isn't an alpha announcer. And so what you want to do is you want to make sure Corey's not annoyed, because he can't hide it when he's annoyed. And Jimmy Smith annoyed him. And who was before him? Briefly, I forgot the guy's name.
Adnan Burke,
yeah. And he was not good, and Corey made it clear he didn't think he was good. Corey can't hide his disdain for what he feels is subpar knowledge and performance. Now, it's ironic in the sense that Corey sometimes overreacts, misinterprets, gets certain things wrong, and so, you know, it's tough to be hard on other people, but then not show humility when you're wrong, which he doesn't do. So anyway, I don't know. I mean, I'm not surprised they didn't. They still feel like relatively new teams, and I'm kind of glad that they don't make the announcers part of the draft. I mean, I think some years they think it's kind of a fun thing to do, but I think it's a little gimmicky too. All right, William, back to you.
Yeah, going back to the Trish and Becky segment, what did you guys think of the timing of bringing in Becky tonight? Because I feel like, you know, I agree with you in that I think there's something about Trish's cadence, delivery, or whatever you want to call it, that kind of works in a weird way. But I know a lot of people are kind of harsh on it online, and it just felt like she was, you know, dying out there in front of the crowd on her own until she did the whole, you know, the whole fake out with the Becky entrance, and people were clamoring for Becky to come in and beat her up, you know, and I thought they had something to that. I feel like they could have at least run with it another week or so of Becky missing and not being present. But, you know, it feels like they set it up tonight, and then they immediately paid it out, and there was like almost like no patience of, like, you know, building up on it a little bit more. And so, yeah, I don't know. Do you think Trish could have carried this feud on herself a little bit more for like a week or so?
Darren, what do you think about that? And is it better to just outright advertise Becky's there? I mean, they'd have to completely change the angle. So is the angle worth the surprise in what you lose by not being able to advertise Becky appearing?
I suppose it was about time to bring her back. But if you had advertised it ahead of time, I'm not necessarily sure how many more viewers would have tuned in. And it's good to give people a surprise sometimes, just so you know, like, oh, you know, you don't want to miss a surprise debut, just to remind people that they should stay tuned. So there's advantages to that as well. But yeah, it was about time to bring her in, because I think the solo Trish promos had kind of we were about reaching the end of that. So Becky had been gone. She's been gone like a month or something. So it was time.
I can't imagine Trish being asked to just fill 3-4 more minutes on her own and then ending the segment. Like, I just, as much as I think, you know, her kind of snide snarkiness is making the best of what she can offer on the microphone, which hasn't been, you know, promos haven't been her strength. I don't think you want her out there alone calling a 2-year-old dumb and snickering about it and then, you know, ending it. So I thought it was fine, William.
Okay, yeah, I can see that. I guess my last topic, going back to something I think you kind of touched briefly on, is, you know, the whole deal of having SmackDown wrestlers on the tournament for the new WWE title 1 week into the new draft going into effect. It just, you know, it might be maybe a little nitpicky, but it feels like they're already, you know, kind of bending the rules of what the draft should be, what the brand split should be, and, you know, how hard it should be enforced. And it kind of bothered me a little. And, you know, when you said that thing about, you know, you could just imagine Vince McMahon backstage saying, like, who cares? You know, it's not like someone from SmackDown is going to win. So, you know, it's not like we're going to have to explain it. I thought the same thing. And for some reason, that only makes it worse for me, because, yeah, they're probably going to get away with it, and they won't have to explain ever, like, what would have been the ramifications of, you know, in kayfabe, there is a big chance that someone like an Edge or Rey Mysterio or an AJ Styles could get away with taking this new title that was supposed to be for Raw, so that Raw could have a new champion that could represent the brand. And I don't know. They're never going to have to explain it, because most likely, yes, Seth Rollins is going to win that title. So did it bother you guys as much as it did to me, or, you know, is that WWE system that you're just kind of used to at this point?
I mean, I laughed on the SmackDown post show and got it out of my system. I mean, I think it's just, you know, it's almost parody to just go do a draft and a brand split and talk about how you created a whole separate title because the brand that didn't get Roman is going to have its own title. And then you just enter a bunch of SmackDown wrestlers in the tournament. I mean, what can you say? It's absurd. I'm bothered by it. I don't know if I'm going to, there's things in the world I'm bothered by, and there's things in, actually, I don't want to bring that up, but, you know, there's things in even wrestling that I'm bothered by, and this is sort of like baked into, unfortunately, the way WWE operates sometimes, which is, you know, disrespecting the audience's desire to have things make sense. And this is just another example of it. I don't think there's a great reason to be this, but I am optimistic that it's kind of, this is it. It's a one-off. They just wanted to get through this week and have as many big names in the tournament as possible. And, you know, when Seth wins, they'll just be like, see, look at what a loaded tournament it was. And that's more important to them than the fact that, you know, it makes no sense that SmackDown wrestlers were invited in it. Darren, what was your reaction when you heard about this, and how do you feel now?
Well, it was absolute nonsense, but I would put it more in the category of eye rolling than anything. I mean, it didn't bother me, but this is just one of the things you have to accept with WWE, that they're going to do just completely idiotic things like this. And hopefully they won't have a SmackDown person actually win the title, because that would just be absurd. But I don't have the confidence that you do that they're going to have a hard brand split. I think that they're going to, I give it a month, and people start trickling in here and there. I just, based on the past, I can't see them making this a firm deal. I think they just did it just to have some programming, and then they'll go right back to it.
Well, I can't blame you for your cynicism. William, back to you.
Yeah, I think I'm in Darren's camp a little in that I'm a little more pessimistic that, you know, a couple months from now, ratings will probably be down a little bit just because of the nature of it being post-Mania and, you know, heading into that dead season, heading into SummerSlam, and here comes the wild card rule again, or the brand-to-brand invitational, or whatever other gimmicks they came up with. But yeah, that's all I had. I'll let you guys get to other callers.
All right. Thanks, Toy. Appreciate it. Our number is 347-215-8558. If you haven't called yet and you're listening to our live stream, you're invited to call 347-215-8558 when you call push 1. Up next, Chris from Oklahoma, VIP member. Chris, welcome. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
Hey, well, William took a little bit of what I was going to say, but I was curious, what are y'all's thoughts about Edge being the first champion? The inaugural champion with y'all. I mean, we all know that it needs to be credible. And yes, Seth Rollins is a given. You know, Seth Rollins is the one everyone thinks is going to win. But what if from one on one last run, Edge would be the one to get it just from one time? Perhaps. What are y'all's thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, if that's the case, if they did that, why not draft him to Raw? What is the reason, other than not planning ahead, that you would draft Edge to SmackDown but then have him win the Raw title? And, if he has a short run and, he's supposed to be a babyface against Seth and it's just a battle of two people who respect each other, at what point, where does Edge lose it to Seth? Again, you know, like if Seth gets a rematch or he loses in the finals, or what are the circumstances of Edge winning in the finals? Nothing comes to mind. I mean, I'm not saying you couldn't tell a story and maybe it'd be decent, maybe it'd be great, and I just don't have the imagination for it. But I think you would have to have a heel win on Raw so the fans were happy about it. And again, I am kind of hung. Like, to me, the only way that this breaking the brand split or kind of contradicting the whole reason for this World Heavyweight title being introduced, the only way I accept that I can sort of get past it is if we're it just we're past it by the end of the month. Like, let's just get through Night of Champions, Seth's the champ going into summer, and we took this weird route that makes no sense, and you have to just kind of take a deep breath and sigh, and let's get through it. If Edge wins, you're sort of extending the nonsense. You've created this conundrum of a SmackDown wrestler holding a belt that was created solely for Raw. So I don't know. I mean, of the options, I mean, Edge against Seth feels like a bigger deal than the heel options that are out there for them in the tournament at this point. You know, if Sheamus is a heel and wins and takes on Seth and then wins the title and moves to Raw, I don't know. I don't think that's going to get people excited. So in a way, I mean, Edge is the biggest name who has some credibility, has been protected somewhat. Darren, what do you think?
Yeah, I kind of addressed it earlier. If Edge wins, you have the same thing of Roman. There's the guy, you know, he comes in for a few appearances and then he's gone for months again. So what's the point? And then if he wins it and loses it to somebody in like a month, what's the point of that?
Yeah.
So I can see him in the tournament final, but not winning it. I just think that would be a bad move overall. And it would be bad for him to win it and just lose it quickly. That's not a good reflection.
Chris, back to you.
The other comment that I had, and this is just a comment from me, and Cody Rhodes is, I like him. Don't get me wrong, I do like him. But part of me, whenever he started the fans saying, you deserve it, I wanted to see Brock Lesnar kick his ass. That bad. I know it sounds horrible, but it's like he's entitled in a way, and I don't think that's what they're looking for to get at him. But I mean, the way they're pushing him, I mean, yeah, he's going up against Brock Lesnar, and he's going up against, you know, having these hard times. He hasn't got to the championship, but for the fans to think, oh, for chanting me, you deserve it, Chance. I'm like, oh, come on, here we go again. You know, they're going to make him the golden boy, and unlike Roman, where he was not loved, this one's going to be loved. You know, what are y'all's thoughts on that? Is it just something I'm seeing, or is it something that maybe I'm looking at wrong?
Well, I'm curious what you think, Darren. I thought Cody's promo, right, the interview backstage right before the main event, I kind of raised my eyebrow a couple times at a couple things that he said. He said that, respectfully, the tournament was mine to win. And, I mean, there's like some good wrestlers in this tournament, including Seth, by the way. This was mine to win. It sounds kind of arrogant. And then he said Lesnar attacked him, and he doesn't know why, but he thinks it's because he's become the man around there. And it's like, have you? I mean, it's not like he's not over. He's definitely over. But is his promo written in a way where it's like meant to send a signal that he's sort of buying his own press, or he's letting, you know, the crowd cheers go to his head? I don't know. I thought it was kind of a weird promo from him. I mean, there were aspects of it that were good. I mean, Cody's like really good in really important ways. I mean, like the kind of timeless throwback baby face. And I like them putting him out there multiple times on the show. He's, you know, in getting his reaction. But the line, the tournament was mine to win, and I become the man around here, and that's why, you know, I disrupted Lesnar's monopoly of the main event scene, and that's why he's attacking me. Like, Lesnar hasn't had a monopoly in the main event scene. That's the whole point is, I mean, I guess the argument is Cody main evented WrestleMania and Lesnar was in the opener, so they're kind of playing on that. But it's not like Lesnar had a monopoly in the main event scene. That sounds ludicrous. Roman Reigns, if anyone, has a monopoly in the main event scene, not Brock Lesnar. So it wasn't accurate, and it seemed a little – he seemed a little full of himself. So I would be careful with that because, again, there were other things – in this promo that were really good, but it raised some flags for me. Darren, did that jump out to you?
Yeah, that definitely raised an eyebrow. They got to be real careful about some of the stuff that he says. And as Chris pointed out, that he doesn't feel entitled also. And it's a very fine line. Sure, he's over super huge, but that stuff kind of chips away. And then the what do you want to talk about thing just rubs me the wrong way. And then it got mocked tonight by Brock Lesnar.
Yes, yeah.
And, I mean, that's the kind of thing fans jump on. I'm like, yeah, that isn't cool. He says that. And, you know, that sometimes creates a little groundswell. So they're going to have to be very careful. Sure, he's super popular, but, I mean, they're planting the seeds. And I don't think it's intentional right now of people perhaps turn them on him down the line, kind of like the AEW situation. Or maybe they're doing it intentionally, like going back to the Michael Cole thing, saying this guy ran off with his tail between his legs, which he said twice.
Yeah.
So it had to be intentional. So maybe they're just planting seeds, perhaps, but I don't think they are. But they've got to be careful going forward because this thing, whole thing could turn quickly.
That's the thing. Cody didn't see it coming, and he didn't know why. And there's times where I think Cody has some good instincts, but there's times where he does seem unself-aware of going too far in, again, I don't say buying his own press, but sort of letting the cheers and the accolades and his natural talent and growth and drive come through in a way that seems to lack humility that eventually becomes incompatible with people in large numbers wanting to root for him. And so A little signs of that tonight. It's hard to imagine he just winged that. It seems like, you know, that would have been written for him. So I don't know. But maybe they are letting him kind of freestyle a little bit. But yeah, I was sort of did double takes at a couple lines in that promo. All right, Chris, back to you.
Also, I'd love to hear y'all's thoughts about Damian Priest. I am really sold on him for, you know, I mean, for at least a big push coming in the future after what he done Saturday night, what he's done tonight. I mean, how he's grown. And I was just wondering what y'all's thoughts on the ceiling for Damian Priest.
Yeah, I mean, his stock is up after what happened with Bad Bunny. I wrote about it in my VIP exclusive roundtable review. Our whole staff after pay-per-views do roundtable reviews and scores. I kind of went into, you know, how much Bad Bunny was impressive, but, you know, Damian Priest gets credit for that too. You know, and that was a moment for him. I think even leading into Backlash, he was showing a different kind of swagger to his character. And, you know, he might have been the one to do the job tonight if it weren't for, I think, some momentum on his side. And, yeah, I'm curious if this turns out to be a bit of a breakout year for him. I mean, he's 40 years old. There's no reason to wait. You know, he's been around. I think he's starting to show sort of an adult in the room vibe that's working for him, and to go out there and have that kind of match with Bad Bunny. I mean, you know, we can say Bad Bunny is a, you know, wrestling prodigy in some ways. I mean, a much better athlete than I think anyone predicted, or had any right to predict, but Priest held up his own, and I'm intrigued with him more now than I was before. And I'm curious, I mean, people in WWE noticed, but I don't know if WWE has a huge history of completely reevaluating how they look at people enough where they would kind of recalibrate their thoughts on how much that they can lean on him. So it's just, it's something to watch. Darren, how have you felt, and what do you think about the praise he's getting?
Yeah, I think he's really starting to click. He's carrying himself with such poise. His in-ring is really good. His whole presentation, I mean, just how he's carrying himself. I think he could be a breakout guy. And the fact that he didn't do a job in that triple threat, I think that speaks volumes. He also offered a good excuse to why he lost to Bad Bunny, of all people, saying that it took half
Whole
a Puerto
island.
Rico, which is a pretty good line.
Yep.
So, he didn't lose any credibility losing a, you know, a person who's much smaller than him. Not that that matters or anything, but so he had a good excuse, and people could, you know, poke holes in that in a heel way, like, no, you lost to him straight up or whatever. But yeah, I think he's one to watch. I would hate to see him go back into the background with Judgment Day, so I don't know if he needs to break out, but it would be interesting to see what path he takes. And I think, just based on what we've seen the last couple of nights, that they have a lot of faith in him. And this would be the time to go. You've got the brand split, trying to freshen up some guys.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would go with him.
Because we're on that phase where they're going to have to elevate some people to fill out 3 hours. And who else is presenting themselves to them on a silver platter as a bonus, as an unexpected bonus than Damian Priest right now? So I hope they're putting some time and effort into figuring out how to take advantage of that. All right, Chris, anything else for us?
One more thing. I was really kind of disappointed that they put Finn Balor in the first triple threat. I was really hoping that they'd maybe surprise us instead of having Seth Rollins win it. Maybe having Finn Balor get an opportunity because, you know, he hasn't got an opportunity in, for a championship in a long while. You know, he got that one run and he got shorthanded by injury. And then after that, you know, he got that match with Roman Reigns that it's kind of forgettable, but I would just, I really hope that they give him an opportunity in the future with that title.
I think we're kind of past that point with him, unfortunately. Darren, I mean, he's talented and, you know, this is a good enough use of him. He's a credible opponent. There's a history of the Universal title that thankfully they played into and acknowledged, but, and he's, you know, he's still good. I think we're kind of past the point of being able to put him at that level. And I, again, if they had planned 3 months ahead and started just telling the story that he's on a hot streak, that's one thing. But he is not going to seem like a credible centerpiece heel on Raw opposite of Roman, I don't think, at this stage. What do you think, Derek?
No, the ship has sailed. I mean, he'll still be featured. Like, he had a, you know, pretty heavily featured match at WrestleMania in the cage with Edge. But, I mean, he was kind of like a comedy foil on Saturday. And that's, you know, it's a fine position. There's nothing wrong with it. But, yeah, I don't think they have title aspirations for him and his future. And but I don't think he's being buried either. But I think he's slotted about where he should be.
He'll be a top. Borderline top-tier utility guy. Chris, anything else for us?
No, thank you, guys, and go be happy.
All right, cool. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it. Always good to talk to you. All right, let's bring Brad on, our inside correspondent. He attended the event in Jacksonville, Florida tonight. Brad, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. So, what's your overall impression of the show tonight, being there in person watching the show for 3 hours?
Yeah, so first of all, like, the thing I was surprised at relatively recently, you know, being from New York where it's a crazy sports town and events town and, you know, New York City and New Jersey and that area is just, you know, the fan base is kind of known for their intensity and things like that. You know, being at a show in Jacksonville, I can tell you, and I have no idea how it came across on television, but I can tell you that this crowd was better than the New York crowd, at least for tonight. I went to a Raw in Madison Square Garden relatively recently. Roman Reigns was there and blah, 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 whatever. This crowd beat that crowd without question. The intensity of the crowd, they were into every single match. You know, it was just really good and a lot of engagement from the fans on everything. There was a few segments, obviously, that, you know, you hit a little bit of a lull in the show or whatever. But on the whole, I was really surprised how into it the crowd was. Now, the one other observation that I think might play into that is just the flow of the show felt a lot different from previous, you know, Raws or SmackDown that I've attended, just because I don't know, it just seemed to move smoother. It seemed to be a little bit more cohesive from an in-arena experience. I don't know, you know, about on television. Obviously, you watch it, and I think we get some of that feeling of the cohesiveness being a little bit different since Triple H has taken over. But it really does show in the live events, too. And the last two I've been to, I went to the SmackDown in Tampa on New Year's Eve or the night before New Year's Eve, whatever it was, when John Cena was there, which was electric. And then this one, which was, I wouldn't say electric, but I would say very, very, very good crowd, like an 8 out of 10.
No, they were clearly to us into Seth. I want to know what you think. And it's so hard to tell because people just love singing Seth's song. But as best you can, compare the reaction Seth got maybe in the match or other ways to gauge it compared to Cody, because they're the co-top baby faces right now on Raw. How did this crowd that was reacting to a lot of things react? What's the intensity level comparing those two?
I can tell you confidently that Cody got a better reaction, for sure, without question. There's just an excitement when Cody's in that you're seeing something big. And Seth feels like, you know, not levels below that, but it feels like a half step below that. Like, Seth felt important and it was a big deal and, you know, everyone was happy and singing the song and everything. But beyond the song, and I do think, you know, a lot of it, and listen, I heard what Chris said about Finn Balor. I like Finn Balor. I think he's fantastic. I think he's a pro's pro. I think he's great at what he does and everything. I don't know if it has to do, honestly, with his newer entrance song rather than the, you know, the one that everyone loved where, you know, whoa, whoa, you know what I'm saying, where, he puts the arms out and everything. And this new song gets zero reaction. And Finn's entrance, so I guess just getting away, I'm getting away from what I want to say, but I think that last match, it just didn't have that feel of like, wow, like this is a great match. Like, people weren't that into the last match until maybe the last 4 minutes or 3 minutes. It was, 10:55, and that's when people started getting more into it. But I could tell you, Seth gets a great reaction, and people love the song and everything. But beyond that, the in-ring stuff, it was fine, and everyone was definitely, let's go Rollins. But there wasn't, like, as big of a reaction to Seth as Cody. I can confidently tell you that.
How about Zoe Stark, for instance, a new act on Raw? Were fans curious? Did they seem to know who she was? Did they like the match because Nikki Cross was in it? Like, characterize, it was a very short match, but you still had the ring entrance and the match itself. Was that an exception to the crowd being into things, or were they into that too?
That was part of the lull segment. And I wouldn't say, like, no one cared. Like, everyone was paying attention, and it wasn't like, You had tons of people going to the bathroom and like just leaving like during that match. But like, it was, I think just people just don't know who Zoe Stark is. But when she did her finisher, people were like, you got an audible like, whoa, from the crowd. And then, it was 1, 2, 3. Her finisher is so good. And it looks so good live. And it just, it looked amazing, at least from the angle I was sitting at. And, but people just didn't know who she was. And I think, she's facing Nikki, that Nikki doesn't really get much of a crowd reaction at all either. So it was okay. I would give it, on a reaction scale, like a 3 out of 10, a 2 out of 10 maybe. But it wasn't like, it just because no one knows who they are, Like, no one really, Nikki Cross hasn't wrestled in a long time on television, and Zoe, I think just don't know who she is. But I do think people noticed that finisher and how good that looked, and that was a positive.
What was the ebb and flow like from a live experience? Because, there was a Seth ring entrance, and then it felt like, somewhere between 45 minutes went by before the bell rang for the match. There were a lot of video packages because they were, touting what happened at Backlash and then replaying the Cody Lesnar angle and then introducing NXT wrestlers. It was, I think, a heavier dose of times looking at the big screen than a typical Raw lately. How did that feel for you?
You know what? It felt normal. I really didn't feel like, oh my gosh, Seth is in the ring for so long. Like, how they do it. The lights go black and really no longer paying attention to kind of what's in the ring during those breaks. And it just, and no one was like, oh, when are we going to get on with this Seth match? Like, I was sitting in a section with some pretty engaged fans. I mean, people were, they knew what they were talking about. They knew what was going on. They knew the storylines. They knew everything. And I don't know why, man. It didn't feel like that. It didn't feel like, whoa, like a lot of video packages, a lot of this, a lot of that. Partially because, they're doing some fan engagement stuff when I guess they're off the air. They're doing, a DX package, and they're panning to the crowd and everyone's cheering, and they're doing fun stuff off air too for the fans to get involved with, best sign of the night and, panning, and everyone's jumping up and down trying to get their sign recognized, and people are just kind of paying attention, like, oh, the girl in the section here got on camera, whatever. So it's not, the flow was honestly fine. It was a really good flowing show live, which I know there was a lot of video packages, but it just didn't seem like it to us. Maybe that was just me, but it just didn't seem like it to us or the people around me at all.
Sure, yeah. Darren, jump in with a question for Brett.
Sure. You talked about who got the best reaction, Cody and Seth, but who got the most heel heat?
Dominic, probably. Mm-hmm. He's really fun to boo. I mean, he's just really fun to boo. And if he had taken the microphone, oh my gosh. But, you know, when he's doing those little shimmies and, you know, everything he's doing and Rhea's out there, like, it's just really fun to boo him. And I just felt like that was easily the best heel reaction. I think, you know, maybe Finn didn't get much of a reaction either because he really didn't do anything so heelish. You know, it wasn't like Judgment Day was, like, ringside with him during that Seth match or, you know, that actually would have added a nice element to that match, truthfully. But, you know, it was definitely Dominic, honestly. It really was. And it's funny because, you know, he went from a guy that, you know, you kind of hardly cared about riding Rey Mysterio's back to this. And it's really special to see, you know.
Talk about the Trish segment and Becky's return.
From a crowd perspective, being there, it really fell flat. First of all, Becky's music hits, and you know, Trish was very hard to hear, like in the arena. I don't know if it was, you know, obviously on TV, I'm sure it was absolutely perfect, you know, the microphone and everything. But
we commented on that earlier. She is not
really
projecting her voice well, and yeah, we covered that. I mean, you could hear her, but it was one of those things where it's like, okay, everyone be quiet. I got to hear what Trish is saying because her vocal cords just feel so tight and she's not talking from the diaphragm. She's not projecting. If all those are things she can't help, she just needs to talk louder. You know, I mean, that's something she's capable of doing and she needs to be coached to do. So I'm not surprised that what you're saying, that it came across that way in the building too.
Wow, that's crazy. Because on TV, normally they'll, you know, can't hear it. They'll turn up the mic, whatever they'll do, you know, but that's really interesting because, yeah, we couldn't really hear her. Like, we heard certain things she was saying, like, oh, my daughter was named – I couldn't even hear what she said. My daughter named a dog or a cat Becky Lynch or something. I don't even know what she said. But when Becky's music hit, everyone went crazy. And then obviously it stopped. And Trish was like, oh, you wanted to see Becky or whatever she said. Like, oh, Becky's gone. She's not coming back. Whatever, and then everyone kind of was like, oh, like, it was kind of a disappointment, I guess. And then when Becky did, when her music hit again and she came out of the crowd or whatever, it wasn't as, oh, my gosh, like, this is amazing. Not at all. It was like people were standing up, and everyone was standing up, but it wasn't like the reaction, like, wow, like, oh, my gosh, like, it just wasn't in the arena at all. Like, it was like, okay, like she gave her, you know, a little suplex thing and that was it. And like, it just wasn't a major part people would remember going to that show at all. At least from my vantage point.
Yeah. Yeah. Darren, what else have you got for Brett?
With the brand split and everything going on, people switching sides, was there anyone, any particular wrestler that people were disappointed was not there? Did you hear any kind of chatter or anything like that?
There was someone. You know what, man? It's a good question. There was, Bianca, for sure. Because, you know, you have a lot of, like, little girls there. A lot of little girls and a lot of women there that like just really want to see her. And I'm not saying Bianca's only for girls and women. Like I like her too, you know, whatever, but you know, a lot of people love her, but it was definitely Bianca because there was a lot of, first of all, this crowd was such a diverse crowd. Like you had tons of kids, tons of, adults, tons of ethnic diversity, like just all different types of people, like, which was really cool. And, you know, there were so many kids that I saw with Bianca signs, like thinking, because here, you know, on TV during Raw, Jacksonville show, whatever, and you get Bianca, is, you know, she was literally front and center in those announcements. I think a lot of these kids thought they were going to see the EST, and they did not see her. So it was definitely her, and that's a good question, because I did notice that, and I knew there was someone I was thinking of, but I didn't remember it until a second in. But, yeah, it was Bianca for sure.
How about direction for Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens and where that ranks based on your expectations of where they were a few months ago and now?
No, it was a good reaction. When Kevin Owens' music hit, when you know, you hear the da-na-na-na, da-na-na-na, people stood up, the crowd went absolutely wild. And then Sami's music came in and everyone was singing it. The whoa, 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 everyone's singing that. And they were even singing it into the commercial break. I think it was a commercial break after they got in the ring. I'm not 100% sure, but whatever.
Yeah.
But people were singing it, and it was a good reaction. But, like, the match itself, like, you know, I don't know, man. It was okay. Like, I like Imperium. I will say this. Giovanni Vinci is capable of so much more than he shows with Imperium. He is athletic as can be. If you – and I know you guys don't watch this stuff, really, but if you've seen some of his matches on NXT and what this guy can do athletically, he is, like, extremely athletic. He can do, you know, 180 flips. He can do this. He can do crazy stuff off the ropes. He shows none of it. I don't know if because Imperium has to have this slow, methodical kind of style of their matches that that's the way he wrestles, but – yeah, it just didn't do much for anyone. And I think Gunther not being there also was a little disappointing, but to the crowd, because I think he, you know, obviously adds so much to Imperium, but it was, or even him being, you know, ringside, but I don't know. Like, that match kind of wasn't, you know, no one's, like, super excited about a Imperium Sami KO thing right now, based on what I guess they're coming out of or whatever. But yeah, it was okay.
Right, yeah.
I would say it was like a 6 or 6.5, 7 out of 10, the reaction. And when they won, like, it was okay, cool. You know, it wasn't, oh my gosh, like, what a great match that was. Like, there was no, I mean, maybe you guys felt differently. There was no great, I don't think any great matches on this show. I think the best match was probably in the arena was the first Seth Damian Priest, God, what was it? Seth Damian Priest and The Miz, right? Or Seth Damian Priest
Nakamura.
And Nakamura, my bad. Yeah. And that was the best match of the night, for sure, in the arena. Or, like, at least the one the crowd was
Darren,
the most
engaged
in.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Darren, anything else you want to ask Brad or bring up?
I'll ask, because I always ask this. What was, like, the most popular T-shirt that people were wearing?
You had a lot of Bloodline T-shirts. You had a lot of, I mean, believe it or not, a lot of RK-Bro T-shirts. I saw like 10 of them, you know, like, which is, I guess people just have their old stuff and they just bring it out. But the merchandise tables weren't like insane. Like, I've been to places where, like, you know, you feel like, oh my gosh, if I got on this line, it's a 40-minute wait or something. It wasn't like that. But, you know, also Raw, it's just so late, man. And you know, this is late, you know, 11 o'clock to leave an arena on a Monday night when everyone has worked the next day or school, whatever. It's a lot, you know? So I think that does play into it a little bit. I think if it was, you know, summertime, no school or whatever, those lines might've been longer, but yeah, man, I mean, look, it was, I was surprised. My major takeaways were that I was a little bit surprised at the reaction, I guess, that, Becky didn't get. And, you know, I think people were happy to see her, but I think it wasn't like insane. And, you know, people were definitely sent home happy with the Seth thing. And I guess that's really about, you know, really about it. I mean, it was good. And I was surprised at kind of the lack of, reaction for Finn and his entrance. Like, it didn't, I don't know if people are just tired after two hours and 40 minutes or whatever, but Finn just didn't get a big reaction at all.
All right. Well, Brad, thank you so much for calling in and sharing your, I should ask, was there anything either before or after the show? We meant to ask that.
Yeah, just before. Before there was two matches. It was Roxanne Perez from NXT versus Emma, and Emma won, which was really surprising. Really weird, honestly. And Emma had a great finishing move that she did that people were like, wow. And The second one was Tozawa versus Nathan Frazier from NXT. And Frazier's like, this guy's like electric. He's so fast. He's like a lightning bolt, this guy. But Tozawa won, and everyone was like cheering for him and really happy. Those first matches, like every time I've been to like a SmackDown or Raw, like those warm-up matches, like people just get into them, man, because like, you know, they, I don't know, like you're just excited to be there and, oh my God, wrestling's happening. And I think that's why, but it's, I think it's to their detriment later in the show when people kind of get a little bit fatigued, you know, but it's fun.
All right, cool. Brad, thanks again. I'm sure we'll talk
Thank
to you
guys. Thank you guys. Bye.
Yep, you bet. Absolutely. So the world title's been a bit of a farce in the, early on, in that, you know, if Roman gets drafted to SmackDown, then Raw's going to have their own title and SmackDown wrestlers are in it. So we got Joe from New York venting by email on this. Hey guys, WWE's really dropped the ball starting at WrestleMania Night 2. All this meaningless TV time spent on a second title that no one wants or needs. All they did by creating this title is make everything seem meaningless. Roman's title means a lot less once there's another champion. Someone needs to wake up Triple H and Vince to the fact that Roman is no longer the undisputed champion once you create a second title. So WWE needs to stop calling him undisputed. He's not the undisputed champion. I always say when you have more than one champion, you have no champion. This was avoidable, not hard. You see, the champion can work both shows. All WWE had to do is put the title on Cody at WrestleMania, and all this meaningless TV could have been avoided. I'm not watching the weekly TV shows. I don't believe in two champions. Wrestling fans should remember Stone Cold said it best in a famous sit-down interview with Jim Ross and The Rock when he told Rock leading up to WrestleMania 17, Rock, there can only be one. There can only be one WWE champion. There can only be one number one guy in the company. Going forward, I will only watch the United States Peacock PLE specials. The rest of the time, I will listen to podcasts to keep up with what's going on. The new championship should be called the Full-Time Championship. All your talents were stupid enough to sign full-time contracts with us, so this is your title, because we all know WWE main eventers don't work full-time. Who cares how many days Roman is champion if he sits at home for 70% of the days he holds the title? Actually, it's more like 96%. It does not mean anything when you sit home. Remember when Hulk Hogan did not work weekly TV in the 80s? It didn't matter because WWE TV was not on in prime time. It was on at 12 p.m. on Saturday and Sundays. It was a weekly show filled with jobber matches. WWE did not have four primetime hours of live TV in the 80s. WWE dropped the ball, not putting the Undisputed Championship on Cody at WrestleMania. They could have had their full-time champ working both shows and Cody. By the way, Vince still has the power in creative. Remember what the press release said? Vince McMahon and the stockholders own 49% of the company. It did not say Triple H and the stockholders do. Vince is the boss of creative. So, Darren, are we at a point where you think, you know what, they could have avoided all this, as Joe is advocating, just make Cody the champ. Don't introduce a second title and have Cody work both shows. He's popular enough. He's got a swagger. He's got confidence. You can tell a totally different story with Roman. They did consider that, by the way. You know, I mean, it wasn't like they didn't ever consider Cody winning. This was up in the air at times. Or for, you know, as I reported, for, you know, 4 to 6 weeks before WrestleMania, they were pretty set on Roman winning, but they were evaluating it as they went. This wasn't a last-second call. But as we look at things now, and again, I think things will be different. 1 month from now, we'll be past this, the silliness of SmackDown wrestlers being in a tournament for a title created just for Raw. And then, you know, maybe it'll just normalize in summer and this will just be a you know, quirky twist in May that we all get past. But where are you as far as the Cody Roman finish?
Yeah, well, in hindsight, I mean, he brings up a good point. They could have avoided all this and had Cody win, and people would have been pleased and gotten on board. He could have built up Cody, but apparently their idea is to, down the line, make Cody have a bigger win, I guess. down the line, maybe next year's WrestleMania, they're aiming to make that maybe a bigger main event or something like that, so we did not get that. But, yeah, this is not off to a promising start with, it's looking very secondary, and you got the SmackDown guys challenging for some reason. It's not off to a great start. And, you know, of course, you can say it's in hindsight, but maybe they should have put the title on Cody. I mean, it's looking that way now.
Darren, is there anything else you want to add about tonight's Raw?
I'm looking through my notes here. I think some of the people who got traded maybe had like a rude awakening, kind of like Xavier Woods, who pretty much, you know, he lost to Dominic, maybe, so he slotted. I mean, that would certainly not bode well, I wouldn't think. And
by,
like,
by the way, pause for a second. What is up with Xavier's terrible jokes and his just over-the-top smug self-satisfaction with how funny he is? I mean, I don't know if he's got such bad facial expressions. He walks in and it's like, yeah, I'm going to say something funny. And then he says it like, that was great. And I'm just like, no, it wasn't great. You're not funny. Playing a trombone is not a babyface move when you do it in somebody's face. He's so annoying. And I know kids love him. And, you know, whatever. He's got, you know, the built-in momentum of New Day and all that, but his scripted material—I assume it's scripted—and not his jokes. I mean, it's so bad. Like, Dominic, you look like you got your outfit at a lost and found, and then his reaction is like he just broke the cleverness scale. It's like, no, wasn't clever. It wasn't funny. You didn't break the scale. Tone down your smug self-satisfaction. It was a lame one-liner. And I mean, if he's on, like, you know, Nickelodeon or Disney and it's a show for nine-year-olds and he's telling bad jokes sort of on purpose and there's a whole bunch of, you know, third graders laughing, I mean, that's one thing. But this is on a show watched by a wide range of people. And I look at the crowd and they're still cheering him. So, you know, who am I to say? But for me, I just can't deal with Xavier these days. Anyway, Darren, how do you feel?
I mean, that's just kind of what they have the New Day do. So that's just, I just kind of accept that's what it is. I thought they were headed in a different direction with them because I had seen a video where they had, I don't know if it was self-produced or if WWE did it, but it talked about his quest to go after Gunther and going after the Intercontinental title is the only, I guess, you know, a belt that he really wanted. And then it never materialized. And we were back to this, you know, kind of comedy back here, so that's apparently not going to happen. So that was disappointing. He certainly needs a new direction, and they could freshen up the New Day. It's still a popular act, but they've got to have some kind of focus, and this is kind of played out and tired. But there's still some mileage in them if they give them some direction and freshen up the act. I don't know what you would do, but this is certainly not it.
I will say they did do the Gunther Xavier match last month on SmackDown. So they snuck it in, but it was just sort of an unconsequential one-off.
Right. And it was a follow-up to that.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yes. Gotcha. Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, then if they follow that up, they did not follow up a follow-up, and you are correct. what else from Raw? Because I jumped in so I could rip on Xavier's smug self-satisfaction with his awful one-liner. I mean, seriously, he said, you look like you got your clothes at a lost and found. How is that? That's not funny, and it's also not really true. I don't get it. Anyway, I've said enough. Go ahead.
I was just talking about how some of the people, like, doesn't look like they have anything for Nikki Cross and Dana Brooke, who I was surprised was on the show. So, yeah, I'm sure there's some people that are kind of disappointed that their first week didn't go so well.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, we'll wrap up. On that note, thanks to Brad, our on-site correspondent. Thanks to everybody else who participated. Thanks to all our listeners, of course. We'll be by with our flagship later this week. We've got our Dynamite and SmackDown post-shows coming up later this week, too. So if you haven't yet, subscribe. Search Wade Keller on your podcast apps to get the Blue Logo Show, our regular podcast, and our Red Logo Show, our post-shows. That includes throughout the week some flashbacks from 5 and 10 years ago. And then search PW Torch and be sure you're subscribing to our free PW Torch Daily Cast. And also free samples of our PW Torch shows on our PW Torch VIP feed. Just search PW Torch and subscribe to whatever pops up there. Darren, thank you. We look forward to your report on Impact on Thursday at pwtorch.com and also your VIP exclusive Impact show with John coming up later this week too.
Cool. Thanks for having me.
Always fun. Thank you.